Evening, buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Welcome to another episode of Dreamers, Drivers, and Doers. I'm Steve Millar at the Greater Akron Chamber. In this podcast, we talk to people who are doing interesting things in our region, helping us shape the events, opportunities, activities that are really helping to advance the way we work here, our economic competitiveness, and lots of other things. And recently, we had an inaugural business growth symposium event where we were focused on second stage businesses, but really generally growth businesses in our region, helping them think about the topics and issues that are going to help them unlock that next level of success. And so today I'm bringing another special episode to the podcast, really a recording of the panel that we did at that growth symposium around AI. We're all talking about AI. We're talking about there's hype, there's tools, all kinds of things like that. But what we really wanted to focus on in this conversation was how are businesses, especially growth businesses, actually using AI to solve the problems and create efficiencies in their businesses, going beyond just kind of putting in random chats and the kinds of stuff you do for research in your business to really how is AI beginning to drive the functions that are driving growth in these companies. And so the panel was moderated by Jay Mellon. Many of you know Jay. He's the president of Aetnet Plus and really works every day in the technology space supporting companies, businesses in our region. And the panelists include Mike McGill of Medical Service Company, Rob Buchwald of Akron Innovations and the AI Catalyst Institute, Brittany Trafus, CEO and co-founder of Sorian Digital. And so again, they'll dive into how they've implemented AI across their organizations, from marketing to finance. They'll talk about where they identified the right place to start, how they prioritized and where they saw value. And they'll also talk a little bit about what didn't go as planned, which is always helpful for us to think about. You know, we know what we want to do. Sometimes knowing what we want to do is partly about knowing what we don't want to do. And they'll share what other leaders should be thinking about in growth companies as they decide how AI fits into their own company. So take a listen. I hope you enjoy this. Great information here from our panelists.
Welcome to the session AI that actually works from first use case to real ROI. My name is Jay Mellon. I'm CEO and co-founder of Aetnet Plus, and I will be moderating today's discussion. And to kick it off, I'm just going to ask each member of the panel to share their name, their organization, and just maybe one thing that they think business owners kind of get wrong when it comes to AI.
I'm in the hot seat here. All right. Brittany Trafus, CEO and co-founder of Sorian Digital. The number one thing that people get wrong is they think AI is just a technology that they can plug in and solve all of their current problems with.
Awesome. And good morning, everyone. I'm Rob Buchwald, CEO with the AI Catalyst Institute. One thing that I commonly as a misperception is that you need to hire someone. More often than not, the AI talent you need is already in your brand. They just need to be activated.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm Mike McGill, CIO at Medical Service Company, a family-owned home medical equipment company that is headquartered here in Northeast Ohio with about 40 locations throughout the Midwest. The biggest mistake I see, or maybe misperception, is that it's just AI is going to be an immediate expense reducer, that, you know, we're going to automate everything and we're going to be able to replace, you know, waste right away, or we'll be able to maybe offset personnel expense. Where really what I've seen, and where my organization is still in the midst of a little bit of a cost increase as you optimize that technology and your expense in that for hopeful, what we're anticipating to be long-term cost reduction.
Well, then really to follow up on the misconceptions, could each of you then share what's one of the most impactful AI use cases you've personally seen implemented over the last 12 months? And what do you think made it successful?
So I'm more on like the marketing sales side of it and really focused on using AI and technology there. The biggest area that we saw is competitor research. So you think about how you're always trying to keep an eye on your competitors, not just from how you're going to inform your business decisions, but then also going into a sales call or a prospect. And we took what would typically take around 30 to 40 hours to do full competitive research, have that consistently giving the information down to minutes, about 15 minutes. I can have my AI run, give me everything on my competitors, any news on them, as well as any, if they're public, any financial information to inform how I can approach my business decisions. But then also as I'm going in to make a sales pitch, I can use that information to help inform it as well.
For me, we work with a number of organizations, so we've seen a number of stories, and some of the top line ones are not about hours saved. Hours saved happen everywhere. It's what do you do with those hours? A CEO reported for a consumer products brokerage, $250,000 of revenue generation he expects in the next year because the team involved no longer has to live in the Excel sheet. They can engage with the clients. Or if I go to the other end, a group of six, Medina County Economic Development Corporation, this is over a year ago, one of their team members was able to reduce the time that it takes for them to create a career plan for the students he works with. When I asked him, Mitch, what he does with the time, he didn't miss a beat. He's like, I help more kids. Mm-hmm. I help more kids. So it's what you do with the time where I think the greatest impact comes. The hours and the dollars will naturally fall to occur.
I think the biggest success we've seen at Medical Service Company is reading and interpreting the large unstructured data that we receive when a patient is referred to us. So we're a referral business. Patient maybe has daytime sleepiness. They go see a doctor. Doctor gives them, sends them for a sleep test. We find, you know, they find out they have sleep apnea. They're referred to Medical Service Company. In order for us to bill that patient's insurance for that CPAP equipment we're going to put them on, there's a lot of qualifying documentation that we need to receive. The insurance will not pay for that CPAP machine unless the patient has right diagnosis. AHI, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on there. And these chart notes we receive from doctors could be 30 pages long. These 15-page sleep studies that before we introduced AI, our humans were having to go through 30 pages of chart notes to try and find the elements that indicated that this patient qualified for CPAP treatment and that they will get paid through that will get paid by their insurance. That process took days, false positives, false negatives, orders piling up of waiting for humans to get and look at this qualifying documentation. Now we've introduced an AI model into that and an AI platform that those documents will get ingested into that. It takes us less than a business day to qualify a patient for CPAP therapy. I mean, this is delivering healthcare more quickly. So it's really had a very huge impact on our organization.
Yeah. So what I love about those answers is I think it reinforces what we heard in the first session about how this technology isn't replacing people. It's a force multiplier. It helps people get more done. So for each of you then, if you walked into a Northeast Ohio company with, let's say anywhere between 25 to 250 employees tomorrow morning, where would you look first for AI opportunities?
It starts with a conversation. So I think one of the, going back to the misconceptions is, oh, just go in and start with a small group and let's just plug it in there. They like AI, we'll start there. But really where you're going to see the biggest opportunity, the biggest movement is where you have a very clear problem and challenge to start with. So if I were to walk in, I'd go meet with every team. Hey, what are your problems? What are your challenges that you're facing? And even as like business leaders, this is an opportunity to plug back into your organization and really understand what's happening in each of those teams. They'll tell you their problems and challenges. They'll have no problem, right? But as you look at that, then you can start to understand, oh, hey, we have a challenge here. Now, based on that challenge that we have, how can we reimagine what that should be and then plug AI in and start growing there? That's where you're going to be able to see great movement. Also, you're going to get a lot of like buy-in because you're helping solve a current problem and challenge that the team's facing.
Brittany, I couldn't agree more. Like it starts with talking to your team more than anything, and the answers are within your org. The question we ask, and I'd encourage you to ask, is what mundane boring task do you have to do again and again every week that gets in the way of what you should be doing, what you want to be doing? First tier answers usually come back as email, reporting, the TPS report, whatever it could be. Companies that are implementing AI still have that, but a second tier of answers that's beginning to appear are data stewardship. How much time are we spending on making sure that our data is clean and is ready for AI systems? And then the other one is just communication, communication, communication. And so AI helps with each of those, no matter where you are in the stage of your journey. But if there's one thing I'd ask everyone to take away from this to bring back is go talk to your team, talk to your peers, talk to your contemporaries. If you're an independent contractor, talk to other independents. The answers are out there just collectively within there. And it's just a matter of talking and talking and talking. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, both really good answers. I think there's different ways you could approach that. Brittany brought up process a little bit. What are your processes? What are repeatable processes? What are processes based on knowledge that you could train an agent to know and be able to provide answers to staff, to customers? But I would kind of maybe second Rob. I mean, how organizationally prepared are you for AI? You know, do you have an AI policy? Have you kind of introduced to your team, like, this is our AI platform of choice? There's a lot of tools out there. And if everybody's dispersed, some are in Gemini, some are in ChatGPT, some are in Claude. I mean, there are specific use cases maybe for different platforms for very specific roles, but organizationally, what AI platform is your platform of choice and fits into your AI policy? So I would probably first come in and just get a temperature check of where are you with AI preparedness? Is your team ready for it? Are you organizationally prepared for it? Are you, our heads buried in the sand still? Have we not gotten in front of our team and communicated with them about AI?
Thank you. You know, I think the distinction between, you know, how can we use AI versus, you know, what problems are we trying to solve with AI? You know, it's interesting as we talk to people and we ask why they're interested in AI, you know, the response we get a lot of times is, well, I feel like I'm behind. Everybody else is doing it, things like that. And my response to that is, you know, if the biggest business problem you're trying to solve with AI is that you're not using AI, you need to slow down. We need to have a conversation about that business problem. So on that note, then, I think what particular challenges do you think are good candidates for the use of AI, and what signals tell you that that process may be a good fit?
I mean, really, there's so many. From the spectrum of it, but where there's some like big problems and challenges that I see that often can be solved. I mean, you hit on it a little bit, Mike, with anything unstructured data. You have data everywhere. And we have spent years and years and millions of dollars being like, we're going to clean up these databases. No, you're not, right? There's no clean data. But starting to look at like, where do we have all this knowledge and context that can instantly start to become very valuable for us? So seeing that, like I use the competitor research, you have so much data that you have on your products, your people, your services, your competitors, and starting to really use that as an opportunity to become a data source that people can just tap into and ask questions. The other areas that I start to look at too is, where do you have, like, to your point, like repeatable processes that you can start to break apart? So one of the things that I always encourage everyone is, once you identify that challenge and then you're like, hey, we can use AI here, don't just take the same process and plug AI in. Don't do that. You can look at it. I've done it within my companies. I've done it with other companies where it's like, hey, this process has 40 steps and 30 people involved. Great. Should it? Should it be 40 steps? Let's break it apart. Let's whiteboard it out and really reimagine what that process should be, and then look at how AI can help it. Because if you just jump into, I have this challenge, I have this process, here's the AI, you're going to miss what this opportunity is that AI is giving us to really be more transformational.
So first, just to cover a few bases real quick, if you're using an AI platform, make sure you're paying for it. If you're paying for it, that generally means that your data is private, is not being used to train models. And it's like, you know, it might be a low cost, but pay for it. And also make sure whatever AI platform that is, it's not owned by anyone who launches rockets. There's platforms that are really good for business, and there's platforms that have no business being in business because these platforms have bias. That's within it, but we'll touch on that later. But in terms of the question of where to make a start, is the Excel sheet that shouldn't be running your business, but your business relies on. And different departments have those throughout there, and like everyone tries to get off that dependency. The opportunity now exists. The other one is any spot in your business process where there's the scavenger hunt. So we hear this often, whether it's in sales and sales velocity is slowed down because the team can't find a spec sheet, or we know we had a client or a prospect who is similar. Can we find the information from it so we can make a proposal for that client? Or we see the same thing from engineering, where there might be a formulation or another item that's similar to something that needs to be formulated now, and going through just all that mind unstructured data, it ends up being a scavenger hunt. So if that resonates with any of you, those are good first opportunities that have a little bit of meat to them in terms of how you can start leveraging AI in a deeper level.
I think a really great candidate where to start is with knowledge, repeatable knowledge. Creating knowledge agents. So for example, a really easy light lift is to create an HR benefits agent. So, you know, you can have certain knowledge that if you ask three different people, you might get three different answers. You might go to your coworker like, hey, how many weeks of vacation do I get? I mean, these are really simple examples, but it's so easy to create an agent that's trained specifically on your benefits, on your employee handbook, just something that somebody can go to and have a single source of truth and knowledge. So you can do that internally with the HR agent, or we created an IT help desk agent. So instead of having to call into the IT help desk and wait until the next person submit a ticket, go talk to Ted. That is the name of our help desk agent. And you'll get quick answers to that. And then that's also for clients and customers. So again, I talk about CPAP patients. You know, why is my mask leaking? Why is the red light on my machine? I can call in. I can wait, you know, however long. We always want that wait time to be low, but sometimes the phones are busy and you're waiting 5 minutes for the next available agent. All that knowledge exists inside of the equipment manual, inside of documentation that we've created and given to our internal phone agents. We trained a voice agent on that material. And now when a patient calls in, they're immediately getting answered by an agent and they're getting taken care of. And they may need to get escalated to a human, but at least they're getting cared for right away and they're getting an answer right away. And we're always trying to drive that containment rate. But I think anywhere you have knowledge, internal, external, that's repeatable and documented, that's a great opportunity to create a knowledge agent.
So I think it's great to hear some of those examples of things that are working. But, you know, one of the things I've seen a lot in the media lately are stories about how organizations are trying to implement AI and the number of projects that just aren't successful and never really get off the ground. What do you think separates the companies that are getting real value from AI rather than those that are kind of just stuck in pilot mode?
You touched on this a little bit ago, but if you are just doing AI because you feel like you have to do AI, right? If you have a FOMO, you're like, well, everyone's doing it, so I need to use AI, you're going to fail. But a lot of the reasons why I see those pilots not be successful is because they're not actually thinking about what they're solving for and getting that ROI. And so, I mean, you touched on it. I did this when AI first launched like 3 years ago. It was like, oh, okay, did I get 5 minutes from you? Did I get 2 minutes from you? And you're like checking the box, like, oh, I have 100% of people using AI, I'm good. But when you start to look at it from the business perspective, what's the actual ROI that we're getting? The ones who are able to show what that's doing for their business growth, the opportunity where they're having people be able to scale their skills because they're not doing the repeatable tasks, they're the ones that are actually seeing that ROI because they're reimagining it. They're looking at their business and they're taking the opportunity to be more transformational than check the box.
You know, first, just the hard truth is if you're not using AI, the crossover point happened in September of 2025. If you were not using AI at that point, you're now losing opportunity. You're losing market share. Your competitors are gaining ground on you. Your competitors are gaining margin. You are now becoming an acquisition target moment by moment because the automobile revolution or the AI revolution, past tensed, it's happened. We're 3 years into it. So the good news is if you find yourself in that space, you're right where you need to be. This is going to be a marathon. It's going to be many years. When I say plan on communicating to your teams, plan that regularly, for the coming months and at least through the end of 27 of asking, what are the changes? How are they working? Getting that constant feedback loop. So the answer to the question of what makes a difference is it's not performative. It's not, hey, I got someone here doing AI. We're done. We're safe. It's a very comfortable place to be because I think this change that's hitting businesses hits business owners and decision makers just in a different way. And some ways, like as human beings, we don't like to process our own death. As business owners, this requires us to challenge our business plans, go back to some of our fundamental values in terms of what the brand is and where it can be. And then also at the same time, look around because there are huge, huge revenue generation opportunities appearing right now. And those who move first and move quickly on those within their brand are going to have a first mover advantage against others. So the first mover advantage hasn't disappeared yet. That's still there. In fact, the more specific and the more focused you are on ways that you're trying to bring AI-driven revenue into your brand, the more likely you're going to be some of the first in the market to be doing that. Those answers coming back, live in your employees, live in these conversations. You don't have to have it built. But there's people who might be in your brand recognizing there's an opportunity here. We just need to put some dollars and budget and a plan to go at it. So the difference, I think, is non-performative. You're leveraging this for your brand differentiation and how you're going to make your mark in the coming decade.
Yeah, I think that maybe what I've seen some failed projects, you know, companies are trying to boil the ocean with their first AI use case, you know, I think there's two different ways of looking at it. Like, how can I find my most complex, biggest business problem? Is that where I should start? You know, I think that maybe that might not be the best place to start. You know, you want to learn how to swim, you got to jump in the pool, you know? So I think the companies that have succeeded with AI jumped in the pool. Maybe, you know, we all had that moment when we were kids and we had no idea. Maybe we only doggy paddle, whatever, we jump into the pool. And then, you know, you end up learning how to swim. So if you haven't jumped in the pool yet, today's a great day to jump in the pool. Yeah, looks not as warm as yesterday, but it'll be a nice day. I think they got started before they were ready to get started and they found use cases, maybe simple use cases they could start getting their heads wrapped around, and they iterated off of that.
You know, one of the things that we've seen in a lot of businesses is when you look at availability to these tools, a lot of times there's kind of like the chosen ones, right? The power users in the environment, they get it. And there's oftentimes a larger population of the organization that doesn't have any access. How do organizations move beyond just a handful of those AI power users and create adoption across the broader team?
It starts with education. So everyone needs to be involved. One of the things that we've done that was super successful is Wisdom Wednesdays. Twice a month, on a Wednesday, we take 90 minutes and we learn AI together. Now, still have your power users. So you still have your power users who are testing and piloting very quickly, and they can help lead that education. But by having those training sessions together where you're all coming together to learn, you're doing a few things. One, you're opening it up to everybody, and you're going to see that expansion, adoption, everyone wanting to embrace it faster. Two, just how quickly you can learn as a team. And it can start as easy as, here's how we prompt. Here's the type of questions to ask. And then it gets more sophisticated into, and here's how we use our own custom agent. And here's, right, you can get to that point. But through that education, you'll start to see that adoption real quickly. But also you can start to put in those, and I'm sure you guys are going to hit on this, so I won't spoil it, but like, what tools you're using. This is your opportunity to be ahead of it as a leader and really set the guidance on here's what we use and then let's learn it together.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll say this is the entire thesis that caused me to found the AI Catalyst Institute. It's not about the technology. It's about the people. It's the process. And, you know, and I'll say, I don't ever want to self on the stage, but there's a number of people in the room as well. If you're doing anything with AI services and workforce activate, just raise your hand and look around. Like, there's a number of people here who are doing this as well. So engage with your peers and those around in our local community, because the answers are right here. They're all around us. I just can't say that enough. If I come to the things, the elements in those companies that are doing it best and what we see, Wisdom Wednesdays is so perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, think about it. You got to pay for pizza.
Yeah.
You got to pay for pizza. And your team's going to come in and start sharing peer-to-peer different things they're doing. Imagine for a difference, let's just forget about it. Yeah. Imagine you had someone who is going to law school in their own time. At night, they're doing the work. They're doing the research. They're getting themselves upskilled. That's an in-demand skill. Chances are you would find new opportunities for that person. Well, right now, there's probably in a number of brands across the region, people who go home, explore AI skills, and are getting upskilled in the most demand skill needed right now. If you are not leveraging them or activating them, they are starting to look for companies that will. Mm-hmm. And I just hate to be so dire about it, but the reality is, especially the younger an individual is, this is the economic reality that each of those individuals recognize they need to live for the next 30 years of their career. And so if you see young talent, I don't want to gatekeep by age, but if you see young talent that's making the moves, enable them. I was one of those kids in the 1990s when it came to like computer stuff. There wasn't many people doing it and worked out well for me. And so if you have those budding superstars in your organization, support them, get them connected. If they don't have peers within on the technology side internally, let them leave your office and go out to where we all are connecting and going through. The great thing about AI is they save time. There's not a single AI tool out there that can shake somebody else's hand, right? And so get those people out and engaging with their peers wherever they may be, because there's all types of groups around us right here. And you don't need to leave Akron to do it. It's all right here in this community.
We're in healthcare, so protecting data, HIPAA, is very critical to us. So we did originally kind of step gently into AI, and the first members of our organization to have Copilot licenses. We decided pretty early on that Copilot needed to be the tool for the general tool for medical service company, because we have a BAA and we have all the data governance and everything in place within our Microsoft environment. Once, you know, our executive team and a few power users kind of, and we got ourselves working with our security team, making sure that we're in a good spot, we launched it to everyone. We did an organization-wide, we did a kind of a reveal event. We didn't say what it was about, you know, come to the big reveal event, and we revealed Copilot. We built a SharePoint page. We do monthly contests for people who are using it, people who come up with new innovative use for it. So I feel like we've done a good job. I mean, we want everybody to use it. Like, we want you to be in Copilot. And if you're like asking, what's a recipe for something I should make for dinner tonight? Okay, cool. You're getting some comfort with prompting and all of that, that then you're going to be able to use it to prompt it to get for answers to the business problems you're trying to solve or how to make things more efficient for you. So, I mean, I just think you really maybe need to lock in organizationally. What are we going to use here? Is it going to be ChatGPT? Is it going to be Copilot? And Copilot's a great tool if you're a Microsoft shop, you know, Claude and other things are out there. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Get Copilot into your team members' hands if you're a Copilot shop, and build some enthusiasm and do some training like Brittany talked about.
Yeah. You know, so I think it's always fun for us to talk about the opportunities and all the cool things it can do, but I don't think we'd be responsible if we didn't talk about some of the things that can go wrong as well, right? And so let's start that part by talking a little bit about an AI project that didn't work out as expected, and what happened, and what did you learn?
Yeah, so I'm going to steal the line from the last panel, but if you're not failing, you're not innovating. And so I have an AI project that goes bad probably once a month, and that's how you quickly iterate. I think the biggest one was this was about a year ago, so before the models had really caught up, I thought it was going to solve all my reporting problems. Like, I have team members who are spending hundreds of hours on reports. Like, this is going to solve it. This is it. Build out the report. This is beautiful. This is everything that I need. Not really thinking about, oh, what's that structured data look like behind it that's feeding into it? So it looks great, But some of those insights that were coming in were not the insights that I needed. And so quickly it became, this is going to solve my hundreds of hours problems. It all of a sudden became, this almost becomes a little bit dangerous. Let's turn that off. Let's go try it again. And so it's okay to have those iterations. Now I can tell you, a year later, the models have caught up, the data has caught up, and it's firing. And now it's solved that problem. But it just shows that you could have the idea that's ahead of where the technology is. And it's okay to try it, but learn quick, fail fast, and then go try something else.
So I'll echo all that. And to expand on it, first, I would say, be wary of AI pixie dust. The step one idea. Step two, AI. Three, profit. If you can't explain it without using the word AI, you might need to do a little bit more work on it. But the other part here, and I think this is a key element of successful organizations that do it, is generally the work and the activity is happening within the org. And at some point, those teams are going to come forward and they're going to need budget. They're going to need time dedicated to where they're going. And they're going to go to an executive team or decision maker who, if they don't understand what AI is, how can they approve projects within their brand? So for decision makers who lack a fundamental understanding of not just what AI is, but what AI is not, the boundaries that exist, the risk for bias that resides within it, and to the points around it elevates bad data really quickly. And so there's risk that can come along with it. As decision makers, if that's not understood, and there's AI projects either being approved or denied or blocked or whatever, that internal understanding becomes a barrier to your organizational success. So it doesn't mean that you need to become the super tech if you're the decision maker, but you at least need to have a foundational understanding of what this is and where it can and can impact your organization and where the risks lie.
I spoke earlier about knowledge agents as a good place to start, but that's been a failure point for us too. Mm-hmm. It's maybe a subjective term. So we launched a couple of knowledge agents that had some good traction. We did training for our managers on how to build co-pilot agents. We like, hey, you guys are going to be managing agents in the future. We want you to really understand what that's like and what that looks like. And people got enthused and we built an internal oxygen support agent. So if anybody internally has a question about oxygen services, they can get that. We did a handful of other internal facing agents that like nobody used. but I don't call that a failure because the manager or the person within the organization thought about AI and thought about, oh, here's something that I think could be a good use case for AI. It's not a failure. It didn't really take off. And maybe part of that is just making sure that we're communicating to team members that like, hey, you can check in with this agent. So maybe they'll get better and more productive in the future. But I would agree with what Brittany said in the panel. Said, you know, failure would be if like you really built an agent or did something that just like disastrously, like, you know, if we had a customer facing agent, they called in about their options and service said, oh, unplug it from the wall and don't plug it back in. That would have been a failure. Fortunately, we haven't had any real failures, just things that didn't have as much success mm-hmm. as we had hoped they would.
So there's a lot of communication, a lot of talk in the space around agentic AI, platforms that can take very complex tasks and complete them autonomously. Where do you think organizations should be cautious about over automating decisions, and where does human judgment remain critical?
So this is an interesting question because I have an AI native organization. So we are built with agents. So I have a team of 30 agents and 6 humans who are running my agents. But even with my 30 agents, I have human in the loop every step of the way. So you could build a fully autonomous agent who can do everything. That's likely not the right decision. There's some tasks that they can do autonomously that are great. However, think about where humans have their strengths and where AI has its strengths. Humans can't shake the hands. They also don't have the years of it. You know, humans have the years of experience. They have the know-how. They have the domain expertise. They can read the room, the emotions, right? They can pick up those pieces. And so having the agents pull like everything it can do very quickly, and then have the human do what they do best, creativity, strategy, human emotion, all of those components. And it really levels up the outputs that you're getting, because you're taking away all the, instead of having a human spend 100 hours going through Excel sheets and going through a process, now they can take that time and really use their expertise and skills. I mean, how many times do you have people be like, I really want to be more strategic. I really want to be like more of a manager, a leader. This is the opportunity to do that with the agents running a lot of those tasks.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm going to take a second. I want to demystify a few terms here. Like, you might have heard of custom GPTs, or you might hear of agentic or all of that. It is the same fundamental prompt that you get if you're sitting in an AI tool. If you approach that prompt with an engineering mindset and you plan and then you prompt and then you proof the result and you have a structure around it, you have a well-formed prompt. If you save that, well, now that's called a custom GPT. If you take that saved custom GPT and you put some rules or actions like triggers on either side of it, now you're on agentic. So it starts with that fundamental of whatever the heart of it is, it needs to be thought through and well-engineered. And in terms of the use case from it, I couldn't agree more. You got to keep these very clearly in a decision support lane. So you have someone who's your expert in whatever domain they are. They'll recognize if something weird came out of AI, and it does. I think we all can attest to like well-engineered systems that all of a sudden want to start doing a role play or like going into like some just things that make no sense. And meanwhile, it's because one of the Californians updated a model. And all of a sudden, it's coming into everything and it starts influencing everything. So absolutely, you always want to keep a human decision maker right in the forefront of it. And I'll just say one more thing and pivot out of it, especially when it comes to HR or hiring or resumes. And I don't know if I'm jumping ahead to a question or not, but just specifically, like, keep AI out of decision making in your human resource processes. Keep people connecting with people. Let AI stay as decision support, but there's a lot of risk that is in that domain specifically within it. So, yeah.
It's always the danger of being the last person by passing.
You should go first next time.
You should go the opposite way.
What Rob said, but maybe to flesh that out a little bit.
Yeah.
At MSC, we have 5 golden rules of AI that we teach our employees as they go through our AI advocates training for our power users. And one of those is the more transactional, the more AI you should use, and the more relationship-driven, the less AI you should use. So it touches perfectly on what Rob said. Tread carefully with AI in your HR processes. In the end, it's your teams that build your culture. It's still, in the end, it's the human-to-human interaction that makes a company successful. Agents and AI is going to help us make us more successful, but we don't want to outsource the most precious thing about us, our humanness, to AI. Sure, you can use an AI tool to maybe do some passive recruiting, or maybe if you get 100 resumes that come in for your position, to maybe have an agent trained a little bit, but you got to be careful of bias. You're just getting into a little bit of a area where you want to tread lightly, or just say, hey, you know what? I'll do that last, maybe until models catch up, or I'm confident that AI can help make sure that I am identifying the right people that I want to get a human manager in front of to talk to and figure out if they're the right fit for the organization.
So let's talk a little bit about areas where maybe AI is either being oversold, or maybe a piece of AI advice that everybody seems to be repeating that you disagree with. And we'll let you start with this one, Mike.
I think people get overhyped and oversold on, like, you're going to fully automate this process. Like, you're going to bring agents in and you're going to be able to just fully automate something, and whatever that means to, like, oh, I might be able to eliminate. It gets sold as a way to, I think, sometimes a personnel expense reduction. In reality, like, we're not finding that. That's not our intention. The intention is to augment. The intention is to make things better. And maybe over time, somebody leaves the organization and, hey, cool, we're efficient enough with this. We may not need to backfill that position. Or if we acquire another HME company, we may not need to bring as many folks on. But that's not the intention right away. And I think that sometimes people will feel it's like this is going to be this magic automation button. And you are going to automate some things, but I don't think it should be looked at through the lens of replacing mm-hmm. people or getting idea like, oh, well, let me go look at the P&L, look at my personnel expense, and oh, I'm going to be able to offset this many people with this technology. Again, that may happen over time. You don't want to be blind to the fact that that's part of the reason of why AI exists is to automate some of these things that people are doing. But I think people can get oversold on thinking that's going to happen right away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, from the first session, when you heard our new owner of the Rubber Ducks mention how this isn't a job eliminator, it's augmenting, you heard some applause break out. Those of us who were applauding, and I don't want to say exclusively, but those of us who are in the AI space seeing this day and day, and what we see, zero job loss. Companies take the time and the benefit, they put it into business development. Now, maybe this is a California versus Midwest thing. Because here we keep investing in our people, in our talent. The headlines about job loss, put a tinfoil hat on me for this next one if you need to, because I think the California companies are running a huge, huge PR campaign to make it inevitable that we are dependent on 7 companies in California who are on track to have 8% of the GDP, 2030, 8% of U.S. spending is going to be on AI. And that 8% is going to funnel to 7 companies in California who've already decided for us, we need to use a lot of their tokens. Oh, it's great how many tokens you're using. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. If I look at where the boots on the ground, where the action's happening in businesses in our community, it's everything that you're hearing about here. And none of that needs anyone from California to make happen. And in fact, we're not far away from being able to host these things internally in our brands at an extremely low cost, 100% private, and we don't need Chuck E. Cheese tokens to make it happen. So be aware of, as you're going through this, there's a long-term dependency the Californians want to create. And I guarantee you, as the years go on, your cost per transaction, that token rate, you're going to still be paying the $20 a month. You're going to get fewer and fewer game tokens as you're going through there. And for some reason, the same thing, it's going to take more tokens to execute. That's the plan. They're in it for profit. So make sure you're leveraging AI, but you're protecting your brand from, I just call it the California tax that's unfolding. So.
Hey, just real quick, just to share your tinfoil hat. I agree. There you go. Thanks. So, you know, they're obviously hyping it up.
Yeah.
I would also take with a grain of salt, was it Stripe or somebody recently said we laid out 30% of our staff because of AI.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's an easy thing to toss out there. Mm-hmm. And it just plants seeds. Just, you know, I like it. We're Midwesterners. Like we're logical. We're objective. We're practical. Like keep that spirit as you step into this and don't believe all the hype.
You're making me crack up over here. So, yes, to what you guys were just saying, the other piece is you'll hear, oh, we're in the hype cycle. We're just, AI is in a hype cycle. Like this is going to go away. Well, did computers go away? No. Did automobiles go away? No. Like we are in the next industrial revolution right now. And we have such an opportunity to be part of it, to be able to shape it. And so, you know, anytime people talk about it being a hype cycle, typically I'll say, well, people's, you know, they'd say their job was computer. You can look back at history and people are like, oh, my job is computer before computers existed, right? And so there are so many new jobs that will exist because of this. And that's where I just encourage everyone, like, lean into those skills, teach the younger generation, like, embrace it, let them go, let them run, because jobs that we can't even think about haven't even been invented yet. And so, you know, I really encourage everyone, like, it's not a hype cycle. It is here. You have to embrace it, but think about it. You know, there's other things too that I just think about, like Ohio and being so proud from here, is there's organizations like Ohio X. I don't know if you're familiar with them. If you're not, like, please check them out. Ohio X is really working to make Ohio, they call it Silicon Valley. And so they want us to be the new Silicon Valley for here in the heartland. And it's because they see the opportunity of what we have here in Ohio, not just from data centers. I know that's a whole topic, but just from the people. And so, especially in Akron area, I know they're really leaning in here because they see this opportunity to bring industry, bring work to Ohio.
So I've heard a lot of comments about people, right? So let's talk a little bit about the human side. How do you introduce the technology in a way that creates excitement and curiosity rather than the fear and resistance, knowing that so many people feel threatened?
Let them run. I think you really have to embrace it. And so give them the tools, let them experiment, and also encourage that experimentation at home. So if you aren't using AI in your personal life, you're not ready to use it professionally. So you have to start personally. You have to start, whether it's your menus or whatever that might be, or vacation planning, encourage your employees to start at home. And that's a little bit different, right? It's like, oh, well, I'm asking to, no, use AI at home. Get comfortable with it before you bring it into the workplace.
And I agree, use it at home, but I don't want to be so monolithic about it, because I also think there are members of our community right now who, when I say the word AI, they have a fear response. Those individuals might be 5-10 years from retirement in a type of role that might really, it wouldn't be far-fetched to say that AI could dramatically impact that role. And they might not have the energy or the enthusiasm or the belief in themselves that they can make this bridge, this gap. And the reality is, it doesn't take that much. For them to become activated, they need to be not in a place of fear, but a place of safety. And a lot of what's being spoken about today is creating that safe environment within the workspace for those who maybe never experimented, but now are asked to, like, hey, please do this. And if you've never done it, here's your AI mentor. Here's someone who's done it, who can sit with you and guide you through it. And it's okay. It's okay. But experiment and try. And very quickly, those groups, they get activated, because the nice thing about AI tools is they are self-learning to the user. They reflect back to you the type of energy that you put into them. And so they're designed to sense those who might not be there, and kind of those little dopamine prompts that, hey, have you thought about step one or step two? Really, really helpful for the beginner. For those of us been using AI for a while, we get tired of them because they're like, you know, first level responses, and we're trying to do some deeper work. But, you know, it's so important to create an environment where your team can engage wherever they may be, because those who might be anxious or afraid to move, they're not going to self-identify. They're not going to self-identify. And so sometimes coming out with a lot of enthusiasm is good. But if you don't also match that with a plan for those where that enthusiasm might cause them to retreat a bit more, you need to recognize that there's different audiences within your brand, please.
And I'd like to hear from Mike before we jump into the Q&A here, too.
Yeah. Just real quick. I mean, we have 500 employees at medical service company. We have contact center agents. We have medical equipment technicians. We have billers. We have people who probably do not even touch a computer when they go home. I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. As soon as ChatGPT came out, I was right in it. I'm just that type of person. That's why I'm in tech. So you're going to have a lot of people in your organization who have no clue. And the only thing they're hearing is on the news or something, you know, Stripe just laid off 30% of their employees because of AI. They're going to come into it, the natural fear of it. You want to be a realist. You know, when we launched Copilot, you know, we're talking, you know, it's like the Sam Altman or whatever quote, you know, humans won't get replaced by AI. They're going to get replaced by humans who know how to use AI. So really, the message is, we're empowering you. We want to prepare you, and we are here to help you. We're giving you the training and tools to get yourself prepared for that AI future, because you're going to be much more successful at medical service company, but you're also going to be more successful in your career, wherever that may go, by being comfortable with using AI.
Okay. So there's so much more we didn't get to, but we are running out of time. So we do want to take just a few minutes, though, to entertain any questions that anybody has. And Yeah, we'll just start right here.
Right. Thank you all. This is really great. My name's Senator Kuzma from Ratliff. And I've read and I've heard that AI actually has potential to add about 400 points of IQ to the user. And so right now, organizations, some of them who are just beginning, are using AI for efficiency, for automation, maybe reduction in workload research. As we progress and as companies become more sophisticated, what do you think the workforce or internally for an organization will need to shift to look like? And what does it mean for the skills and attributes of the leadership? Because, you know, AI could be like a pair of running shoes. You can learn how to run a marathon with it, or you could do nothing with it. Mm-hmm. The tool itself, it doesn't really matter. It's really the user who's using it and the way that you're choosing to use it.
I mean, I'll start real quick because I talked about a touchdown training earlier, but what we're doing with all of our leadership team members is we're putting them through what we call AI advocates, you know, nice, cute name, but it's like the intention is to really get you under the hood and understanding AI, first couple courses, how to use AI, how to use AI in the Microsoft Office suite of products. And then it's how to build an agent, because you will be managing agents in the future. You know, Brittany talked about she has 6 humans and 30 agents. You're fast tracked to probably a world that our leaders will be living in, or some degree, some mix of I am managing humans and I am managing agents. So we want our leaders to understand, so they learn how to build an M365 Copilot agent, like a personal agent for themselves, not just chatting, but going in and building an agent. And then they learn how to build an agent in Copilot Studio as well. So that, like an organizational or a team agent. So we are giving our leaders very specific agent building training.
Do you guys do like training, like where you go to like other businesses to actually see what type of assistance that they will need if they're looking to go to AI?
Yes.
Yes.
So, again, contact me, or, you know, I think we recognize a number of other people in the room as well who do workforce activation or go into companies and do that. And then also, I want to point out Jay, who is with Atnes Plus and is a managed service provider. And so many companies have a managed service provider. So whether it's Jay, there might be a group like Jay that they work with. So generally, it's whatever teams you're working with right now to answer your questions around that might be a good first point. And then I got a stack of cards, or old-fashioned LinkedIn requests, as I call them. Just grab a card. We're welcome to reach out or connect you to whoever it could be within the region on this.
So Rob was mentioning a lot of the development and money and everything is in California. With his tinfoil hat, I'll use my statistical hat and add on to that, that's a lot of white males that are working in that industry as well. So built into AI is that California rich white male bias.
Mm-hmm.
So my question really is for Brittany is, how can we encourage more women to get into AI, maybe young women who don't know where to start, or women who are in their careers but might want to transition to this, you know, this new field that's awakening around us? What do you recommend or advise or just encourage?
Yeah, I love that question. So yes, I mean, that's the reality, right? And I've been in tech my entire career, and I walk in the room and sometimes I'm the only woman. But I have seen that changing with AI. So I go to a lot of AI conferences, and I'd say over the last year, you're seeing a lot more women start to step up. And so my encouragement is, get out there. These jobs do not exist yet. These skills do not exist yet. And so the ones who are driven and they want to embrace it and they want to bring these skills forward, you have the opportunity. And so, you know, anytime you see someone who's like, I can't get into that industry, like, put your arm around them, right? And be like, you got it, girl. Like, go. You can do this. Go try those skills, right? I'm an AI. I have a software company. I own my own company. And so, you know, just really embracing people. And I'm always, you know, mentoring too, like, get out there. But I am really encouraged. I am seeing the change happen right in front of my face. And I just love seeing those rooms change.
But anyway, thank you all for coming out today.
Best thing that's ever happened to you financially. Go.
Easy. Sold my car on Carvana. Amazing offer.
Really? I hit 200 on the scratcher.
Did the scratcher come to your house and hand you a check?
No.
How many scratchers did you hit to get that? I hit a button on Carvana.com once.
Okay, that's fair.
It's like the lottery, except you always win.
Not like the lottery at all, actually.
Exactly! Inexplicably good. Offers worth bragging about. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.